at a time.
What happened?
Well, a lot of things, and I don't know, and I want to tape this so I can update Bud on anything you might know. After you tell me what you called for, I'm going to have a series of questions to ask you about new developments down there.
Okay, I called to say I talked to Henry Hale. I met him in the hallway. He looked rather dejected. He's been in the...
You met him where?
In the hallway outside of McCrae's office.
When?
I went to talk to McCrae's court reporter to try to get a copy of that section of the transcript.
Yes.
A court record where they interrupted the malpractice case.
Yeah.
She seemed like an awful scatterbrain moment.
Who, Hale?
No, the court reporter.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to try to find that, and she cited a ridiculous price of like $100 a page or something. But I think she might have been facetious, and I might have had her at a...
Yeah.
But I met Hale coming out of, and we chatted on the way to the elevator, and, he wouldn't talk much about the case, but the impression was that he looked dejected. And I had heard the day before that he was going to... I got a letter from Ray, and I heard that Hale was trying to go take his deposition.
He lost. He did. He filed a motion on it.
And I think this was the day before he actually filed a motion.
Now, what day was this? Do you remember? It could not have been the day before he filed the motion, because he filed the motion by mail on the 4th.
Oh, well, maybe this, but he may have filed the motion by mail and had been filed in the clerk's office.
He went down to Memphis again as soon as he knew we were safely out of there.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. What else?
I was just curious. I asked him about it, and he said, I don't know whether I am or not. And I guess that was the subject of the conversation.
Well... Wayne, what he has done ought to make a story that you could sell if you had any contacts to a big city paper. He filed motions that you ought to get on the 4th that are as big a legal outrage as anything I know. They amount to pretrial discovery of the entire defense case in a criminal case. And the judge did not throw them out of hand. He's been blackmailing the judge and blackmailing us. Pardon me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Bud was away. He didn't get back until late last night, and he'd been up since 4:30 in the morning when I had a chance to talk to him about 10, 11 o'clock. And Jim's out of town and exhausted, and of course Bob couldn't be of any help. He was tied up in his own murder case, and besides that, as you know, Bob's done no work on the case.
Yeah.
So, well...
Where does this put us, though?
Well, as of today...
We had a follow-up story from McRae saying that he was confident that the hearing will proceed on October the 22nd as...
Well, he's interposed a major problem by scheduling a hearing for the 17th on this awful, rotten stuff that Hale has filed that the judge has to know is improper and has to know he can't really consider. He's intimidated the judge with all of these things he's doing, with all the things he's doing publicly and privately. Didn't you see a story in the paper saying that we were going to use this evidentiary hearing to try the case in advance?
Well, yeah, well, he's made that allegation at the hearing in August.
Why do you think?
Retrying the state case under the guise of an evidentiary.
Now, why, now that you're a graduate lawyer, why do you think he would make such an allegation?
To make McCrae look bad.
No, you're not thinking, Lenny. You're not thinking, Wayne. Of course, everything he does is calculated to intimidate McCrae. McCrae appears to be a very decent man who wants to avoid all extraneous issues, and he thinks the way he can avoid them is by making them possible. Until he shuts Henry up, there's not going to be any end of these extraneous issues.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the case law that Henry cites shows that there's one court decision right after the other saying that you do not use the evidentiary hearing to retry the case.
That's right. There's no question about...
the issue of voluntariness of the plea.
Oh, this is not restricted to the voluntariness of the plea. That's what distinguishes this from all other cases. You reread that Sixth Circuit decision. It is not only on the voluntariness of the plea. It is not only on the crookedness of the lawyers.
What?
It is on effectiveness of counsel.
Okay, well, that is another very closely related issue. But what I'm saying is until the Sixth Circuit ruled on this case, all the case law up to that point would tend to support Hale, but the Sixth Circuit decision brought in these new elements, and McCray told Hale in court, he said, "Mr. Hale, you're arguing all this case law. You should have argued that case law of the Sixth Circuit, but I've already got my orders from the Sixth Circuit Court."
Well, precisely. Now, what are his orders? No, you're missing the point. A full judicial inquiry into a case that reeks. Now, what is at issue in this case is effectiveness of counsel. How in the hell do you show effectiveness or ineffectiveness of counsel except by showing what counsel did or did not do?
Judicial inquiry that reeks of...
It reeks of... I've forgotten the exact words. I can give them to you if you want them. I can get them out.
Well, that's all right. I can look it up. But incidentally, go ahead. When you say intimidate, you use the word intimidate. That's a pretty strong word.
Sure, he's intimidating him.
How does that intimidate?
What the hell do you think that Uncle Tom Haynes was doing when he went over and told those gross and deliberate lies to McRae, the page I asked you to get the transcript of for me? I want to have the exact words to use. If this comes to an issue, because by mail I have made it an issue. As soon as I got home, I wrote a detailed account of this and mailed it. Now, I want to tell you what else I did, Wayne. I knew that, I don't know if I told you this when I was there, but I could get a clear reading on those rotten bastards. And most of the notes I made had nothing to do with evidence. I knew that we were going to be the subject of surveillance, and I am without doubt that my motel room was entered. I told you that at the time.
Yeah.
So all I carried was a stenographer's notebook. I left my tape recorder in the motel room, I left my camera in the motel room, and all I carried was a stenographer's notebook. Now, my handwriting is close to illegible. Hale tried to read my notes several times in Bubba Blackwell's office, and hell, I didn't even try and stop him because I knew he couldn't read them. But he reached over, he didn't even hide it. Now, when I saw what they were up to, and I found out that I was precisely right, almost all the notes I made are on rotten, dirty things they did that constitute abuse of process. And because I knew how corrupt they were going to be, and I knew that they were going to misrepresent this, having already misrepresented it to the judge on a number of occasions, and never having refuted it, when I refuted it by mail, as you remember, the judge once mentioned in court.
Yeah.
When we left the last place we were for discovery on Wednesday, in order that there would be no question about this at all, I went to Bob Livingston's office. We happened to bump into Bob on the street, which made it easier. He was just leaving his trial. And I said, "Bob, how about letting me use your Xerox to Xerox a few pages of notes I want to mail myself?" He said, "Sure. But you got to ask Walter." So that involved another witness, Walter Buford. And he said, "Sure, I have to pay for him." He said, "Forget about it." I went to the Xerox machine, and Walter's investigator was there. He said, "I'll Xerox them for you." That makes another witness. Then I had to go to the receptionist to get an envelope and a stamp. That makes another witness. All of these people know that I Xeroxed my notes at a certain time on a certain day. As soon as I had them in an envelope addressed to myself, I said to Jim, "Let's go." And we walked along Main Street until we found the post office pickup box with a latest pickup, 5:30, right outside where you call it the music hall.
Right up by your hotel.
Right. Well, you know, I regard it as an auditorium, but I think it's called the music hall.
That's it, yeah.
Okay, well, if you will walk along Main Street, you will find that is the one with the latest pickup. It's pickup for 5:30, and by God, I made it. So I now have a Xerox of all of my original notes made in Memphis, bearing a postmark of Memphis and the October Wednesday the 2nd. Now, there sure as hell is not going to be any question of my having made these damn things up ex post facto, is there, Wayne?
No, there isn't.
All right, so I couldn't anticipate all of Henry's dirtiness, but I did anticipate enough. Now, I presume that this is not a violation of any confidentiality, but I would rather have you keep it in secret.
But I won't say
anything. All right. Look, I told you to begin with, I'm making a tape, so I'm preserving it. But I just want to be sure that you understand that even though I know you're...
You're not writing anything, right?
I know you're not on the story, Wayne, and I know you finished your book. But I'll give you an example of the kind of stuff they've pulled. We were in Stanton's office for discovery on the 2nd. They dumped it all on John Carlisle. That was on Wednesday. On Thursday, we were told that only that John Carlisle was sick. On, I think, Monday of this week, Hale was down harassing McRae. He admitted to Jim very frankly that he was nagging the hell out of Sixth Circuit all day Thursday of last week. And he went down to nag McRae. One of the things he said, and McRae told Jim, is that in effect I had precipitated a heart attack by John Carlisle, and that John had developed heart pains and had to be hospitalized because I treated him so ugly. Now, this is fabrication from beginning to end. The only thing...
Carlisle's not very bright anyway.
Don't you kid yourself on whether or not he's bright about this case. What had happened, and I don't think this involves any breach of confidentiality, and I think Jim has filed motions on it, is this. I went over the stuff he showed us, and I said very simply, this does not include all that the judge's order includes. He said, yes, it does. And I said, no. Now, for example, this is what it does not include, and I tick things off with descriptions, even including the contents of some, Wayne. And I'm sure Carlisle wondered how in the hell did I know what he was holding back. And I'm sure he realized that he and Stanton and the whole goddamn office, if the judge got his back up, could be held in contempt.
I see.
Do you follow me?
Yeah.
Now, there's just no question about the deliberateness of the contempt. There isn't any question at all.
Held back?
Pardon me?
Do you think it was a deliberate attempt to hide back?
Well, I don't think, again, I don't think I'll be violating confidence in telling you that that night Jim and I discussed it, and I raised a question with Jim. I said, Jim, we don't want debating points. We have always behaved as honorable men. We know that Stanton has contrived the situation to keep himself out of it. Let us go to Stanton tomorrow and lay it on the line, personally, and tell him, Mr. Stanton, we don't want to file any contempt motions. You're having a subordinate handle this, and we want you to know that we have absolute proof that the order has not been complied with. Now, this was my idea. Jim agreed with it. And we did go to Stanton with Haynes. And he couldn't have been more ill-mannered or surly or unconcerned. We did go to Stanton. Joe Haynes was with us. Stanton never stopped signing a series of forms he had in front of him. He didn't say hello. He didn't say goodbye. He made us a goddamn speech about Judge McRae's order not intending him and Judge McRae not intending him to get down on his hands and knees and paw through all the files he has on the case, that he turns it over to subordinates, he trusts them, and if he want to make an issue of it, go back to Judge McRae. And at that point, I interrupted him, and I said, Mr. Stanton, we have suggested no such thing. We have come here to tell you that you have not complied with the order, that we have the proof, and you can do with it what you please. And at that point, we left after he made the same speech the second time. Now, there just is no question about it. They are in contempt, but there is also no question the judge isn't going to do anything about it. I can't tell you that. Now, Wayne, I have never at any time discussed the substance of the discovery with you, and I can't do it now.
Okay, well, now I don't want you to do anything you don't feel like you can.
Well, I think it would be wrong, and that I wouldn't have told you any of this if it weren't off the record. I think that somebody down there ought to have an understanding, and I have a particular point in mind with that somebody being you.
Yeah.
There are ways in which you can help. One of the ways, and I think you have to ask yourself whether or not you can properly do it. I think you can. You may see otherwise. You were off this story when you had a discussion with Joe Haynes about their telling lies in court. Am I right?
Well, I would say they were lies, but...
Now, wait just a second. Forget about... Wayne.
Advocacy.
Wait just a second. Let's take this step by step. Were you or were you not off the story then?
I was more or less writing. In fact, I wrote that particular story, I think.
Well, then that would raise a different question. I think that I thought that you were off the story. If you that would raise a question as to whether or not you would be willing to make a statement as to what Haynes told you about his concept of advocacy and what it was about, because it was lies.
Yeah, well, I thought it was, they were trying to put a nicer face than that on it, but to me it was a lie, yeah.
Well, could you honestly, without any compromise with yourself as a reporter, give me a simple statement on that written out?
Okay. The thing is, Harold, you know, my name was mentioned once in the court record.
Oh, Wayne, you should understand something. I have no doubt that I was under surveillance all the time I was there. They're going to know all the time you and I spent together at night, and they're going to try and make out that I was leaking everything in the world to you, and you know goddamn well to this day you don't know a thing we got on Discovery.
That's right, and nothing has been written about it, see. So
pardon me?
I don't care about the surveillance. I mean,
well, that's not my point, Wayne. My point is that...
I haven't written anything about it, so...
Well, that's not the point either. The point is that they're going to try and make a big thing out of nothing. Now, you don't really know some of my...
Yeah, I tell you what, I thought this out real quick, and I think my response is sound. Yes, I'll give you a statement on it. And the thing is, it's because they put my name in the record, I have a right to respond to that, because my reputation is at stake.
I agree with you, and I'm glad you reached that conclusion on your own. Now, let me ask you this, Wayne. Make it as detailed as possible. Don't make on not that you're a lawyer or that you're a reporter, but that you're writing an investigative report in which any detail, no matter how seemingly inconsequential, might be of importance.
Brief statement, because it was a long-distance telephone call.
I know, but what I'm saying is go into what you said to him and what he said to you and try to include everything you can remember, regardless of whether or not it seems to have any importance.
Yeah, and I'm sure he taped my call.
Pardon me?
I'm positive he taped my call.
Do you have any reason to believe it?
Well, yes, because the long pause from the time I talked to his secretary, Hale had gone on vacation. We later learned he went to Washington, D.C. And when Haynes came on the line, I had the feeling he was taping.
Include that.
Cautiously.
Include that.
Yeah.
Include that in your statement. Then just say it's belief.
That is just sort of a vibration I had.
I'll tell you what relates to that. The nature of the call that he made to Jim this past Friday led Jim to believe that he was contriving a tape he could edit. After all these things started happening this week, Jim thought back over the nature of the conversation that Hale had contrived last Friday, and Jim felt it was so that Hale could prepare an edited tape.
But that's not what disturbs me, is you say that McCrae's going to buy this?
Look, Wayne, there's no secrecy involved. Let me read you part of the discovery motion. It's called Motion of Discovery. It was filed on Friday. And I'm just going to read you. The first one is to depose Ray on the 15th. Then he asked for an order requiring production of documents from the petitioner James R. Ray as follows. There are four breakdowns. D. Let me just read D. Any copies of any communications from, to, or about any of the following people, listen carefully, which may be in the possession of Ray or his attorneys or agents. Now, there follows a list of up to and including P. I am one of them. Now, this amounts to pretrial discovery of the entire case because I am the investigator. This amounts to a license to interfere with the privacy I have a right to with my counsel, because Bud and Jim have represented me in three cases in court already, and Jim is representing me now in private matters that have nothing to do with this, where he's just trying to collect money people on me. And I wrote the judge a long protest about this, charging abuse of process. Now, if the judge... Now, you just imagine... Can you consider that a federal judge would seriously consider that he's entitled to discovery on every goddamn thing Ray's lawyers have, everything Ray has, everything Ray's investigator has?
Because work products would be excluded.
Of course, and the work product is included in letters. Well, in other words, when the judge didn't throw this out of hand, being allowed to depose Jimmy 7 days to the day before the hearing, and waiting until this late to even make the motion, filing a motion for discovery this late, The judge is not a baby. He knows that this has ulterior purposes. He knows it's to intimidate him, and he knows it's to interfere with the capability of the defense to prepare its case. We've been going, Jim and I have been going crazy for days responding to all this frightful stuff Hale's been doing, and we haven't had a minute to put on the case. I didn't get a chance to get to going over any of the discovery material I have to analyze until yesterday.
Oh, is this a lot of flack?
It is a deliberate abuse of process, and I have charged that to the judge.
And no response from McCray yet on that.
No, and I sent a copy. I sent a copy for Hale and Haynes to their boss. I sent it to the Attorney General himself. I asked the judge to recognize me pro se, and to recognize the letter I wrote him as formal charges of abuse of process, contempt of court, and unprofessional conduct by those two wretched bastards. Now, I don't think the judge is going to do it, but I'm serious about it. And if they think that, pardon me?
Do you think that McCray will not force Carlisle or Stanton to turn over what they were supposed to turn over?
I don't know. I do know this. Jim's away, and I haven't had a chance to discuss it with him.
So
I do know.
Is it significant to the case?
Pardon me?
The stuff that they failed to give you, is that significant to the case?
Wayne, I don't think I ought to offer an opinion on discovery material.
Yeah, okay. I didn't want to get into what it was. I was just wondering how...
Well, it is material that we think clearly, without doubt, explicitly as anything could be, is specified in the order.
Yeah.
Now, I know that Jim intended to file a motion on it. He asked me to prepare an affidavit that included this, and I did. And I gave it to him. I had it executed, and I gave it to him. So I presume that Jim did file a contempt order, a motion for show cause why a contempt order shouldn't be issued. None has been issued. Jim told me that the judge had told Jim he would issue no contempt orders. That's all I know. I've heard nothing from the judge, but I do know what Hale is up to a degree, and I've told you only part of what I know. But I'm telling you, I have never seen such improper behavior by lawyers in all my life as those two people were up to down in Memphis. There was nothing they could do to interfere with discovery that they didn't do. They were so transparent, Wayne, that I told Jim almost to the minute the time the Sixth Circuit handed down its decision. And incidentally, as of this minute, none of us on the defense has a copy of it, and it's over a week old. Can you imagine that?
McCray's answer to the application for a writ of mandamus by Hale.
Yeah, but don't forget, we're involved. We're the defense.
They never did ask y'all for an answer, did they?
No, they didn't. But they still did not send us a copy of it. And as of Thursday, Bob didn't have a copy. As of last night, Bud didn't know of his having a copy, and he'd spoken to a secretary. And as of the time Jim left Thursday night, he didn't have a copy, and it was then a week old. So we don't even know what the Sixth Circuit said. All we know is Jim's reading that it didn't please Hale.
Well, there's a Scripps Howard newspaper in Cincinnati. I'll call the court federal reporter who covers cases before the Sixth Circuit for us, and I think she can get us a copy of that.
Well, I'd appreciate a copy as fast as I can see it. Now, what I'm telling you...
The courthouse is closed on Saturday. I'll call her Monday morning and she can get it for us.
Wayne, what I'm telling you is that, in my opinion, McRae is basically a very decent man. I think that he is, from what little I've seen of him, a man who at least wants to be a good judge, and I believe he is a good judge. But I believe he just has no kidney for a fight. And I think that he's just trying to pretend that if he ignores all these extraneous issues, not one of which we have raised, they're going to go away. Well, the consequence of his abdication of his responsibilities with respect to these things, especially when I once wrote him directly with a copy to Hale, and once wrote Hale with a copy to him, is what causes the present situation. Now, he was aware of what Hale was up to, because the very first thing we had to do on Wednesday morning was go over to him and get an order. Now, this is public. I'm under no confidentiality on this.
He got an order to Hale.
we got an order directed to Hale and Car. I don't know who it was directed to. I haven't seen it yet. But the first thing Hale did was raise the question whether I was entitled to see anything because I am a, quote, huh?
I remember that.
Well, now I'm telling you that Hale's known from the beginning that I've been the investigator, and he checked it with Bud and Jim personally when he was in Washington on his vacation, so-called vacation. He said he had his wife with him. That's a nice thing for a man to travel on state business to take his wife.
Yeah.
I think make a nice story.
We speculated on why he went to Washington, didn't we?
Well, I don't even know if...
The post of Attorney General has been vacant since April, May. He's had no direct superior.
Yeah.
Your theory about the Justice Department...
Well, I can't even...
signals up there.
I can't even swear to you that it was his wife. All I know is what he told me. But I offered myself for questioning to him then, Wayne, because of all these lies he'd been telling to the papers. So... Pardon me?
Not very many of them have been published.
A fair amount have been. Jimmy, I was silent. He was on radio and TV too, remember? I was silent until Jimmy sent me a story, which I interpreted as Jimmy raising a question about the character of his defense. And that's when I addressed it to the judge.
How does it look now? I mean, you have moments of panic, I'm sure.
No panic. No panic. I'll tell you very frankly, Wayne. The only questions I have are whether this judge is going to preside over the trial with the forcefulness that a judge should. Is he going to stop Hale from all of this stuff? And if he doesn't, there is no possibility of an honest hearing.
Well,
the second question...
I wouldn't use the word forceful, but he certainly didn't let Hale intimidate him at that first.
Well, he certainly has let Hale intimidate him behind the, in private. I don't think there's a reasonable question about that. Now this could be.
I was in his office the other day, and he looked beat. Hale did, and I asked him. I said, "You're going to get that? You're going to take Ray's deposition next Tuesday?" And he said, "I don't know whether I am now or not." I mean, he looked dejected.
Wayne, ask yourself what purpose was served by his taking Ray's deposition this late.
You say it's a lot of flack.
If he had a serious purpose in it, he'd have done a long time ago. He deposed Foreman in April. And Foreman hasn't signed it yet. And as you know, isn't going to.
That was one other question I was going to ask. Foreman supposedly said he wasn't going to appear in Memphis. John Uhall called me and told me that.
That's my source, too.
And, however, Kay Black says Hale told her last week that Foreman will attend, will be here.
That'll be the eighth wonder of the world. As a matter of fact, I think that it is the lesser evil for Foreman. The case against Foreman is so overwhelming that he may decide that he has to run his risk and brazen it through on his own not inconsiderable skills.
And come anyway.
Well, I don't know, but I'm telling you. I'm telling you that Hale told Bud and Jim that wild horses couldn't drag Foreman up. That's all I know.
Couldn't drag him up?
No, wild horses is the phrase he used, couldn't get Foreman to the hearing.
Oh, I see. Well, that will damage him considerably if he doesn't show up, right?
Well, I think that the question is what's going to damage him worse, and I think that if I know Percy Foreman, he's just going to decide to ignore the whole thing because nobody can do anything to him because he's separated by distance and isn't subject to subpoena for an evidentiary hearing.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we could allege, although I don't know, not being a lawyer, that Foreman is a necessary witness in the trial, you see?
Yeah.
So I think that Foreman can avoid all of it and just issue one of his contemptuous statements to the press after it's all over and saying, well, they got nothing else to try the case on, so they're trying it on a poor old man who broke his back and saved the man from being electrocuted.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody always quotes that kind of stuff straight. So,
the city extra slapped me a couple of sandwiches. Any other high points you ought to hit before we...
Well, Wayne, I really don't know anything because I have had no contact with the judge and no contact with Hale. And all I know is what Jim told me, and I know that they have been keeping Jim, knowing Jim was the only one who could work on the case, they have been keeping him from preparing the case. That is the purpose, that is the intent, that is the effect of all of these abuses of process, of which I think without any question of doubt, Henry Hale is not only guilty, but is deliberate in it. I think that is the only purpose served by this constant stream of lies to the press, by the lies to the judge. What he said about John Carlisle and me is very obviously a lie. And I'll tell you very frankly, Wayne, I know that we were in a hostile environment down there and that they got a lot of witnesses on everything that I might allege. But I've got no doubt at all that because I anticipated it, I can tick off a case that will stack up against any lies and any perjury they can produce. Part of it is in my notes, and part of it will be in descriptions. And don't you think for 1 minute that I can't recount almost every word that happened in Carlisle's office.
It's all over. Not that I need it for literary. I'm just curious. I'd like to go over it, of what they actually did.
Well, Wayne, I think that any of this will have to await one of two things. A public... unless there is a public proceeding, or until a time comes when there is no restriction on me.
As I said, someday, you know, when they're saying that it's not, when you're not bound by these court rules.
Yeah, well, I don't know, Wayne. I'm not a lawyer. But you know that I have not written...
I passed the bar this week.
Pardon me?
I passed the bar.
Hey, congratulations, man. Congratulations. That's very good. So, as of now, all I can tell you is what is my opinion, Wayne. And I tell you again that I am not a lawyer, that there is no innocence on any of Henry Hale's misconduct or Haynes's, and I think that Haynes imposed upon and abused the judge last Thursday in court with the grossest deliberateness. I think there is no possible...
Thursday or Tuesday?
Oh, no. I'm sorry, Wednesday.
Wednesday.
What? Was it Wednesday or... No.
I was thinking it was Tuesday. Wasn't that the day you wanted to look up? The malpractice case was... about 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
You're probably right, yes. Yes, it was 2.
I wrote down it. I could have been
yeah.
Wrong. I wrote down 2.
That's the day it was.
Okay.
It was the day...
I asked the court reporter.
It was the day that we had to go into court, and it was Hale's idea. We didn't ask for it. And the reason given simply will not stack up. By the way, there is one thing you can do that could be helpful for me. If you could go through your morgue and that of the commercial appeal... and make for me a copy of every public appearance on this case by Canali and everybody else on the evidence, where they discussed the evidence and showed pictures of the autopsy and things like that. This addresses the nature of the...
Morgue will have all of it, but I know Bob Livingston has one date. That was in Jackson, Tennessee.
I'm aware of that, but I'm talking... I'm talking...
Carlisle made a speech before a group that I know about.
Wasn't that the truckers?
It was a downtown luncheon club. Now, the truckers I haven't heard about, but I'll check that
out. All right. Now, because when you read the transcript, and this is not secret because it happened in court, Haynes pretended to the judge that the only reason for our being there was that we wanted indecent pictures for indecent use, and these included pictures of nakedness. And I think you will see my point immediately in this, that this was an imposition on the judge. We had no intention or capability of using the pictures that way, but in fact the prosecution had from the very beginning, from the moment the case was over. And I told the judge in writing that all he had to do was call up the morgues of the papers and ask, and he'd find enough. And if that wasn't enough, I'd produce more.
Nakedness, how would that
happen? I beg your pardon?
Why would that be a factor?
Well, this is what I mean by saying that the judge was abused, his trust in the lawyer was abused, we were abused, the net effect was an abuse of process and a defamation of us. And the judge didn't ask any questions. Now, that was not the purpose for our being there.
Yeah.
That was not the purpose at all. That was entirely new. And poor Jim didn't know what in the hell to do because, as you realize, he's inexperienced. If I was not a lawyer, or I would have spoken out, but all Jim could say was, Your Honor, this is all new territory. And the judge didn't pick it up. Now, I think the judge was deficient in not picking it up when charges... Pardon?
Okay, I'm going to have to run here.
Okay, Wayne.
You want that Tuesday transcript and also as many appearances as I can dig out. On where Canali or Carlisle, I know Carlisle
any of them
made speeches detail the case against Ray.
With evidence shown.
Yeah, with evidence shown.
Fine, Ray.
Okay, I've got to run. I'll see you.
Thanks a lot.
I'll give you a call next week after I talk to the court reporter in Cincinnati.
Appreciate it.
Okay, well, I'll see you.
Bye-bye.